This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yep.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Jack Medalli, sophomore from Tennessee, gets a bucket, but AU going to get the bigger prize. It is an American success story. For the first time since 2014, the Eagles, Patriot League champions, flying back to the NCAA tournament.
And a lot of people in town really happy about that. They beat Navy 74-52 at Bender on Wednesday night to clinch the Patriot League title. They now face Mount St. Mary's Wednesday in Dayton, 6:40 p.m. tip in a 16-versus-16 game for the right to move in to the main draw on Friday. Joining us right now is the head coach of American University, Dwayne Simpkins, who most of you know in town, played at Maryland, played at DeMatha, played at Maryland. He's been coaching in this area now for so many years, was the head coach at Sidwell, head coach at St. Albans, an assistant at Mason for many years, and now in his second year at AU, he's got the Eagles into the tournament. I talked about something the other day as it related to you, because I could be wrong, and you'll correct me if I am, but I think this will be your first NCAA tournament game as a coach or player since that loss against Steve Nash in Santa Clara in 1996. Yeah. Is that correct, or did you go with Greensboro or with Mason in one of those years as an assistant?
No. I told my staff, I told Jackie Manuel, that who's on my staff, he's, you know, went to Carolina, won a national championship, and I was like, Jack, you know what? I'd have been there damn 30 years. And he was like, man, really? I was like, yeah. You know, when I was at Greensboro, when I left to take the job at Mason, we recruited a really good crop of kids. We had a really good recruiting class. And that class, by the time they were seniors, I guess 2 years later, they helped Wes Miller get to the NCAA tournament. But yeah, man, I haven't experienced it in quite some time. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back to it.
All right, I want to talk about what's upcoming for you guys, but one of the things I mentioned in telling that story is that Gary's often told the story that he tried to convince all of you guys, you know, you and Exery and Johnny, that Steve Nash could really play, but he's told the story that you looked at Nash in warm-ups and all of you guys thought he can't play. Is that true or not?
That's a damn lie. No, that's absolutely not. I mean, I didn't know Steve Nash, the Steve Nash that we all knew, but, you know, basketball players recognize basketball players. We had watched enough tape, and we knew he was a good player, you know. And for the record, people like, oh, man, Steve Nash had a triple-double on you. And, like, I didn't guard him. X-Ree guarded him. You know,
right.
Coach Williams wanted somebody with more length and everything on him, but really good team, man. We were not as obviously without Joe. Joe went to the league the year right. before. We were not as good, and we weren't as connected. You know, it's just that was a tough year. Even though we did go to the NCAA tournament, I think that we still did not perform up to the expectations that we had.
Dwayne Simpkins was part of Gary and Maryland's resurgence in the early to mid-90s, was the starting point guard on the first three Gary Williams tournament teams in College Park. The first two went to the Sweet 16. I'll still never forget that win over UMass to get to that Sweet 16 against, by the way, the remaining portion, minus Weber, I believe, of the Fab mm-hmm. Five. I think everybody but Weber was still there, right?
Yep. All those guys were there. Juwan Howard was coming into that game. His averages coming into that game, it was crazy. It was like 31 points, 11 rebounds, three blocks, or something like that. And it was ironic because our freshman year, I remember vividly myself, Johnny Rhodes, Exery Hip, you know, sitting in a dorm room watching the Fab Five play and, like, cheering them on when they played Carolina and everything. Like, we kind of looked up to them. And then, you know, a year later to be playing against those guys in the Sweet 16 was pretty surreal. It was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, and it was a competitive game. I mean, I think we had a shot in that game. I mean, the UMass game was the payback because I'm pretty sure we had lost to UMass earlier in the year in the regular season.
We lost to UMass in the up in Springfield, Mass.
Right.
You know, got hosed by the referees, and like Dante Bright was on that team, was a McDonald's All-American. We were on the same
Lou
McDonald's
Rowe.
All-American team. We were on the same AAU team. Lou Rowe was on that team.
Mike Canby.
Williams, rest in peace. Canby, Derek Kellogg, like they had a loaded team. And man, they were talking so much trash once the game was over. And like we were pissed. And when we saw their name pop up in the same bracket as us, man, we were like, oh yeah, we couldn't look past St. Louis, but we took care of St. Louis and we were so excited to play UMass, man. And I don't know if you remember, Kevin, we were dead in the water, man. We were down 18 or whatever it was. And Mario Lucas came off the bench and shot a bad shot that he ended up making, and that got us going, man. And we ended up, you know, pretty much walking away with that win to go to the Sweet 16.
We used to basically put a stopwatch on Mario Lucas when he got in the game, how long it would take him to put it up, because he was not afraid.
No, it didn't take long for Mario to get one up, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about your team. When did you know at this during the season that you had a team capable of winning the league and advancing to where you are now?
I mean, quite honest, Kevin, I felt that the year before when I got the job. I knew we had some talent. The question was going to be, you know, how soon could we get them to play quote unquote our style? You know, we were going to play faster. We weren't going to be playing like Loyola Marymount back in the day, but we're going to play faster. That's going to take time. You know, they were used to playing the Princeton offense, but I felt with the pieces that we had, the main pieces between Elijah Stevens, our point guard, Matt Rogers, obviously, I felt that we had some ingredients that we could compete and potentially win our first year. And I'll go to my grave saying it, man. If we don't have the injuries that we had last year, I mean, we finished the season with like three walk-ons playing 15 minutes a game. If we didn't have those injuries, you know, instead of us finishing 10-8 in league, tie for second, you know, I think we probably win two or three more games. We got a shot at winning that thing last year. But the main thing coming into this season was making sure that we could get Matt Rogers to come back. you know, he had some Power Four schools offering him some, you know, a couple of dollars here and there. And, you know, I had to state the case to him, say, hey, man, like, you've put in a tremendous amount of work here on and off the court. You're a business school graduate. You've got all these connections that you have and will have if you stay here. And more importantly, from a basketball perspective, man, we got a chance to cut the nets down. And this wouldn't be possible if we didn't have Matt Rogers in our roster. You know, it is what it is. And when he decided to come back, I knew we had a legitimate shot.
You know, what you just said is something that I bet you a lot of coaches pitch it in a lot of different ways, but the opportunity that a kid like Matt Rogers has, and I'm going to guess that he's probably not an NBA player, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe he'll play professionally, it's, you know, overseas or wherever for a few years, yep. But the opportunity in a town like this one with the relationships that he'll make as a business major, as you mentioned, you know, graduating from AU, I mean, there's a bigger life play here for some of these kids.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we're not, none of our guys have delusions of grandeur that they're going to be, you know, NBA players. Matt does want to play in Europe, and he's going to play a good number of years in Europe, and I think he's going to make some pretty good money. I played over there a number of years, and a guy who's 6'9" that can shoot 40% for three in Europe, like, he's going to have a long career if he chooses to have one. And that was part of the pitch too, you know. I got him on some Zooms with two or three agents that deal with international teams and players and everything, and they all pretty much told him exactly what I told him. I said, you know, Matt, you can go to said school in the ACC and average, you know, 6 points a game and play 15 minutes a game. They're not, these GMs and teams that may sign you next year, they're not going to look at what you did the year before at American when you put up pretty good numbers. They're going to look at what you did most recently. And I said, this could be the difference between you getting your first contract at X and or stay here, put up a banner, put up good numbers, and now you're making Y that could potentially be 20, 30 grand more in your first year. And it puts you on the track to now, in 2 years' time, you know, being close to seven figures and everything. So I laid that out to him. It was affirmed by the agents that I put him in contact with. And, you know, he made an educated decision. I thought he made a great one.
I don't know how many years you played internationally. I mean, I remember you playing internationally in a bunch of different countries. How many different countries did you play in and for how long?
I had two different stints. So I played my first 3 years when I was in France. I was in Belgium. I was in Italy. So those first 2 years, and then I took 3 years off, and that's when I started dibbling and dabbling in coaching. You know, I was an assistant coach for the JV team at DeMatha. I was a part of Joe Wooten's first staff at Bishop O'Connell before I decided, you know, I haven't gotten basketball completely out of my system, and I went back and played for another 3 years. I was in China, finished my career in Europe in Milan, Italy. So I spent a little time over there. Great experience.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because I've talked to people, you know, before, a lot of people, you know, Darren McClinton and a bunch of different people that had played in a lot of different countries. A lot of you guys have said, and I'm curious as to what you would say, that the experience of playing in all of those different countries, playing abroad, you know, playing in places that don't speak the language you speak, was just an incredible overall experience.
It was, you know, from a cultural perspective, you know, I got a chance to go places, man, that I otherwise would not have been able to go to. You know, I got a chance to go to Rome, spent 10 months living in Milan, Italy, you know, going
not
to
a bad spot
was,
to live in, huh?
Yeah, man, I was 45 minutes from Switzerland. Every Sunday we were off, I'd go up there and hang out on Lake Como. Like, I couldn't have done that without this basketball. And more importantly, you know, from a lifelong perspective, you know, I knew I wanted to get into coaching at some point in time. I had some really good coaches, and, you know, some European coaches and Eastern European coaches, their teaching and methodology and articulation of some basketball concepts are, some of them are really, like, completely different. And at the time I'm playing, I'm like, man, this is, like, so backwards. And here we are 25, 30 years later, and it's like, some of those things are actually, I teach, they apply, I apply them right now. So from a coaching perspective, man, I got exposed to a different way of teaching and a different way of looking at the game of basketball that has actually helped enhance my ability to coach the game of basketball.
Talking to Dwayne Simpkins, head coach of AU. So give me an example. What did you take from your experience overseas into coaching?
I haven't implemented this, but it's funny. Me and my staff, we had hours of debate on this last year because, like, we're a denied team. We're out in the passing lanes and everything. So you're taught from, like, sixth grade, seventh grade, whatever it is, elementary school. When you're in the passing lane, if you're guarding somebody, let's say, on the left wing, you get your left hand in the passing lane. That's what I've been taught all my life. And my year that I was in France, I had a coach who's crushing it now in the EuroLeague, one of the best coaches in the world. He was teaching the complete opposite. Instead of having your left hand in the passing lane, you would turn your body and you would have your right hand in the passing lane. And me and him went back and forth on it. But if you think about it, if you are in position and a guy does drive, you don't have to open yourself up to now help in the gap. Like, you're already there. So it's just little nuances, things like that. He taught me, man, I became a really good ball screen point guard, just reading the defense when I came off of ball screens. Back before, I thought you use a ball screen so that you could score, and that's not the case. The idea is that you put two on the ball, and now as a point guard, you've got to read, all right, where does this pass go to? And that pass may not be the assist, but that may be the pass that leads to the assist because you made the proper play. So things like that, man, I've learned, and it made me a better player then, and it's making me a better coach now.
What did you take from Morgan Wooten and Gary Williams into your coaching career? Give me, like, one from each.
Well, from both of them, I would say process, just being process-based and letting the outcome be a byproduct of the work that you put in. They were very similar in that, you know, every single day treated like a championship. You know, Gary, I mean, we could beat Wake Forest by 10 on the road, and we got Carolina coming up on Tuesday night, and we walk into practice and think, like, all right, we're going to have a nice, you know, chill practice, and you would have thought we lost by 25, and, like, it was us against the world. Like, he had an innate ability to make you just get yourself up to play as hard as you possibly can for the next opponent. From Coach Wooten, the biggest thing, man, in terms of, like, just teaching and the connection with the players that I have as people and teaching life skills and being really conscious of, like, I'm a teacher first and foremost. You know, yeah, we all want to win basketball games. I have to win basketball games in order to keep my job. But, you know, I try to impart so much, man, on these guys from my experiences as a dad, as a husband, so that I can prepare these guys for life beyond basketball.
All right, let's talk about Mount St. Mary's. First of all, well, you know, you guys watched the pairing show, I'm sure. Were you expecting to be a 16?
Yeah, okay. I was expecting, you know, just the strength of the Patriot League. You know, we didn't have any marquee victories non-conference, so I knew we were going to be probably a 16.
Yeah, you played Carolina early. That was not a close game, but you played at High Point there in the tournament, and that was a competitive game. So you didn't play Mount St. Mary's this year. You played them last year. What do you know about them? What are the keys to winning on Wednesday night?
Well, different team. You know, they are Donnie Lynn's the coach now. He's done a tremendous job in his first year. So a different team. They had a few guys that are still the point guard there from St. Stephen St. Agnes here locally is still the point guard there. But personnel's changed. You know, we're going to have to handle their pressure, in particular on dead balls. They'll utilize what we called it at Maryland at the time, 55s, a diamond press. They're going to try to trap the first pass. So you got to be prepared for that. You know, they're going to shoot some threes, some good ones, some bad ones. You know, we got to make sure that we're contesting those. That's going to be really, really big. We know that that's what they rely on. And then conversely, that's something that we've actually been pretty, pretty good at. We're like top 125 in the country in terms of our three-point percentage defense and allowing them the fewest number of threes made. So, you know, that's going to be a tough task for us, and we got to be ready to do that, and we got to take care of the basketball.
How much do you look ahead to, you know, and how much scouting of Duke do you do before, you know, a potential matchup Friday?
Absolutely none. When I was an assistant coach, I would try to do that, man. It never worked out. It was like it was bad mojo or something like that. And I've seen Duke enough on TV. I'm like, all right, yeah, it's Cooper Flagg and this guy and that guy. Like, sprint your ass back on defense, box out as hard as you possibly can, don't turn it over. You know, so right. I haven't looked at them at all, to be honest with you.
Really rooting for you. I know a lot of people in town are. I mean, you have grinded it out, and you're in a great spot right now. Best of luck on Wednesday night, Dwayne. Hope you get a win.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate it, man.
Dwayne Simpkins, everybody. AU against Mount St. Mary's in Dayton on Wednesday night, 6:40. And then the winner gets Duke on Friday at 2:50 in Raleigh. Duke's playing in Raleigh, right, Denton? I think they are. Pretty sure they are.
If they better be. If Louisville is in Lexington, they better be in Duke.
Yeah,
better be in
I think Duke's playing in Raleigh. I think that the other Eastern Seaboard site was Providence, right? So they'd be playing in Raleigh. So let's get AU. Look, Mount St. Mary's was coached for several years by a guy by the name of Dan Engelstadt, who is a guy that played basketball at my alma mater, Walt Whitman, who lost in the state finals, by the way, on Saturday night to Laurel. Congrats to Laurel, but another incredible run to the state finals for Chris Lunn and Whitman. But he did a great job at the Mount, and I think now he is an assistant at Syracuse. I think that's where he went. Good luck to Dwayne Simpkins. Would love to see him, you know, get that win and then maybe scare Duke for a half. I don't think they can beat Duke, but you never know. We've had some 16s over ones. Two of them in the last 5 years, right? UVA 5 years ago? Not 5 years ago. We didn't have a tournament 5 years ago. 6 years ago now.
I think UVA was seven. We're getting old.
2019. I think it was the 2019. Oh, they won it in 2019. 2018.
Right.
Yeah. And then Purdue in 2022 or 21.
2023, and then they got to the Final Four in 2020, and they got championship in 2024.
Lost in the finals last year, 2023, right? All right. Up next, we'll talk to Matt Schick from ESPN. He covers college basketball. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow the Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With us every Monday and Friday, covering the team on our behalf, is Ben Standing from The Athletic. He's got his own podcast, Last Man Standing, and you can follow him on X on Twitter at Ben Standing. Before we get to catching up with everything that's happened since we talked on Friday, what do you think the signing of both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins means in Cincinnati as it relates to Trey Hendrickson?
I mean, if I had to pick a side, I'd probably lean towards it's a step towards re-signing Trey Hendrickson, that now that those deals are done, they can, you know, play with the salary cap as needed to figure out a way to get it all done. I mean, I guess it's just like, teams have decisions, you know, who you're going to keep, how much money you want to spend, whatever. But the fact that, you know, Joe Burrow kind of pressed ownership into getting the T. Higgins part of this done along with Chase is one thing. I think that really did lead to this getting done because, I don't know that the T. Higgins is on that team otherwise still just because it's a lot of money at one spot. But, just scoring is not enough. You got to be able to stop the ball. We saw last year how they couldn't. So I just don't see how you're planning to try to win, spending all that money at receiver and plus Joe Burrow's contract, and then giving up your best defensive player, even if they got back a fair compensation and draft picks. Like, that's not helping them now. So if I had to guess, I'd guess they'd find a way to get it done. But, you know, we'll see. The Bengals are, you know, notoriously, a cheaper organization to say, and, there's a lot of money on to spend on Hendrickson plus those guys. So maybe not, but if I had to guess, I would guess they figure out a way to get it done.
All right, we'll come back to, you know, edge, pass rusher, and if Hendrickson were to stay in Cincinnati, where does Washington turn? Just if you can do this, since we spoke on Friday, there was activity over the weekend with players being re-signed and one player leaving. If you can just catch everybody up to speed as to where we are on roster adds and roster losses.
Defensive end was activity there. The defensive line, Cleveland Farrell, Jalen Holmes, Stang, two guys that were, just part of the depth last year. I thought Holmes did some good work playing inside and outside. Farrell started, two sacks in the first two games, and then they just kind of, that was the highlight. Clearly, nagging injuries, he never got too far after that, but just more depth at that spot to help that room potentially. Dante Fowler, meanwhile, leaves, signs with Dallas. It's on the surface. We've talked about this, it seems weird. You wouldn't want to bring back a guy who got, 10.5 sacks last year, was very productive in that regard. But, his issues against the run, or he just at least wasn't a particularly strong run defender, I think really showed up in the NFC Championship game. He was involved in that very first Saquon Barkley play where Barkley goes, 60 yards or so all the way for a score, and then Fowler ends up playing less than 30% of the snaps, which was the season low for him. So it seemed apparent that Washington was, maybe they're willing to bring him back for not much. He did what was his tweet the other day before free agency started, basically that he was getting tired of being disrespected.
Yeah.
Felt very much like, might be talking about Washington. It sounds like a loss, and I'm not saying it's not, but I think Washington's plan overall here is, okay, they got to start getting better. It's not just enough to have decent players. They got to fix certain spots, and clearly they've made some moves, including like signing Javon Kinlaw to address that. Then on the other side, I think that the Nate Herbig signing was this weekend,
that happened,
right?
Over the weekend. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so basically, a guy who's a veteran guard. He started in this league. He's played center as well. Injuries kept him sidelined last year.
But look, they obviously, as we know, with Sam Cosmi likely to miss at least some games to start the season because of his ACL surgery, they need some more bodies there. We've already speculated that Andrew Wiley, particularly, after the Laremy Tunsil trade, could end up being that guy. He played guard in Kansas City, and if Brandon Coleman's a right tackle, then maybe Wiley slides in, and maybe he still does, but now they have another guy who could do it more, who's played the position more recently. So you would think on some level, Herbig is part of the replace Cosmi competition, and Wiley's sort of there with him, but maybe he's also there in case Brandon Coleman, for whatever the reason, isn't a smooth fit at right tackle. He could go in there. So, I think, more depth, they needed to get some different bodies for their backup offensive linemen. And now they have a guy who's, had some success, has started, and maybe at this point, maybe the front runner to be that Cosmi replacement.
His brother, Nick Herbig, who was playing linebacker and playing really well for the Steelers last year early in the season, he was like considered to be a big injury miss and loss in their game against Washington, and then came back, I think, maybe after the Washington game and played pretty well. So back to, let's just focus on the defense today. Because the bottom line is, they've kept a lot of their own. They've added a few from outside, Kinlaw and Goldman and Wise and Jones and Harris. But at this point, how much better on paper do you think the defense is, if at all?
Well, I think it's better, and it would be in sort of incremental ways that maybe not show as obviously until we see them on the field together, right? I mean, look, clearly the run defense was a huge problem last year, right? We already know that. The secondary, the pass coverage issues, let's just say Marshon Lattimore improves, that would go a long way towards helping there. But the run defense, they just gave up tons of yards, as we know, on the edge before contact. And, Saquon Barkley exploited them in every single game they played. But there isn't like one signing where you're like, oh, wow, okay, that's definitely going to fix that. I mean, Javon Kinlaw would be sort of the most obvious one to point to in that regard. But, if he's playing defensive tackle, they already have Payne and Johnny Newton. So what are we talking about here as a guy coming off the bench? Okay, that's important, but that's not like the fix. Now, he maybe is going to end up playing more on that edge,
right,
perhaps in rundowns, and maybe they think that's the fix. But, I think we've all sort of questioned that signing, at least in terms of the money, the contract terms. We'll see about the fit. I've never, I don't think he was previously viewed as like a Dave Butts run stopping type. But okay, I guess I understand what they're thinking with his big body. A guy like a Dietrich Wise, he's a guy that can get sacks. He's not probably going to do what say Fowler did last year, but he's also more likely to be a better all-around defensive lineman, right? So I think it's things like that where it's like nothing is like, wow, that move definitely right there fixes the problem or helps them address it. It's more subtle in that regard. And, I think that's where it's hard to say that they've improved, like, wow, look at this group. But let me see them on the field in Joe Witt Jr.'s system, how they plan to use these guys, and then I would feel a bit better, particularly up front. I think against the run, at least, I think that to me is how I would see it. And then hopefully, obviously, there's a trickle-down effect if they're more stable up front, and that helps Bobby Wagner, that helps who's, the strong safety, et cetera, do what they do. But like I said, it's more of an incremental thing. And for me, at least, I'm going to have to see what that looks like on the field before I say, oh, okay, cool, they definitely have upgraded.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any clue, and I think most listening don't either, as to whether or not how they feel. And Trey Hendrickson, if they were to have gotten him, or if Myles Garrett actually had been available, who knows, and we'd have a totally different view. But they may feel just year two in the system is a big deal. But when you look at it from our standpoint, from our position, they've essentially added only one player that you can pencil in as a starter. I mean, they're bringing back Bobby Wagner. That's a big deal. I'm not minimizing it. It's a one-year deal, but it's a big deal that they're bringing him back. But I think Will Harris is the only player that they have signed defensively that you would say, well, he's probably going to be a starting safety next to Quan Martin. I mean, Kinlaw is going to be a part of a rotation. Jonathan Jones may be a part of a rotation. He might be a starter, but that's basically it. And what I think most of us had agreed on when the season ended, this was the side of the ball they needed to improve on.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I remember, I can't remember who I was talking to, but on my podcast at one point, I think it was my buddy Dalton Ross, who's a Commanders fan. He writes for Entertainment Weekly. He was saying, you know, it's funny. We talk about this defense, and we say individually, we look at the different players, and boy, Wagner had a good year. I mean, maybe you and I talked about this too. This guy had a good year, et cetera. But then in totality, you're like, but wait a minute, they get run over all the time. You know, what do we make of it? Then, of course, Lattimore's issues, as you know, highlighted in the two playoff in games against Tampa and Philly. You know, what's going on there? So it's tricky in that regard, and that's, I think you're right. I mean, look, even with the Will Harris thing, is that an upgrade over Jeremy Chinn? I mean, Jeremy Chinn was pretty good as the season went along, and you know, if you just look in terms of the contracts, doesn't mean this is how it'll play out, but Jeremy Chinn's deal was more notable than Will Harris's deal. So that suggests that the marketplace wanted Jeremy Chinn more than Will Harris. So yeah, it's hard to say that, like, on paper, that this has been an improvement. Now, obviously, I think, you know, like a thing like Johnny Newton playing, right? Obviously, his whole offseason last year was messed up because of having a foot surgery on both feet. So does Johnny Newton come in this year with a full offseason, and does he look like a transformed player? Maybe. And you know, that's what we're talking about, right? You know, can they get a player or two on defense to shift things around? Maybe they're banking on that happening. But, you know, again, to be fair, he's replacing Jonathan Allen, who, you know, I'm not saying Jonathan Allen was the best defensive player last year, but obviously he's been very good for this team for his career. So, you know, we're saying Newton's going to be bigger impact than a guy that was a two-time Pro Bowler, particularly, you know, I mean, Allen was on the field the first five-plus weeks before the injury. So, yeah, it's confusing. Now, again, obviously we haven't gotten to the draft, and maybe that's where they bank on getting more impact. But, yeah, I mean, it feels like they're bringing the band back together, and the band was off-key for a good chunk of their performances last year. So it is confusing, and yet it's like, well, I kind of get the guys they brought back, but yeah, it's a little confusing. And by the way, like the defensive line, you could look at it right now. They've got 11 guys who you could say would make this team. Like, it's not like, yeah, you know, I mean, they're all solid, but is that enough to improve them? I mean, that is the real question.
Yeah. It's one of those things where if it doesn't change personnel-wise significantly between now and opening day, I think most people, and I would put myself into that group, would say biggest concerns, stopping the run, defense again. To your point, we talked about it all season long. They've got good players. There's like a disconnect with their inability to get teams off the field, their inability to stop the run, and Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner and Daron Payne and John Allen and Johnny Newton and Dorrance Armstrong and Quan Martin and Jeremy Chinn. But for whatever reason, it didn't work. And maybe they view the players in a similar way, and maybe it's the scheme. Or maybe it's just year two. They're expecting a big jump. Defense is very variable, you know, year to year in terms of performance. So perhaps they're more confident in, you know, it's not stopped them from thinking about people like Myles Garrett and Trey Hendrickson. But in terms of the players they brought back, you know, a lot of those one-year deals, the Sheldon Days and the Jalen Holmeses and the, you know, and what they believe that maybe they'll make a big jump and it'll be different. Defense often changes year to year a lot. Maybe they're due to be better on defense next year. Maybe that's the strategy.
I mean, we saw that in the Rivera era. There were years where that group was, you know, ranked top 10.
22? 22, they were number nine in the NFL in DVOA defense. They were an excellent defense. That's why they were in the mix for a playoff spot late in the year.
Right, for sure. And I think, like, you know, to compare those two teams, I think, you know, Daron Payne, I think so much of this to me, you know, we don't talk about him a lot because, you know, of the two defensive tackles, he was always the quieter one. You know, when they had the four defensive linemen together, he was always the one who was like, you know, okay, he's more run stopper than pass rusher. That's far less sexy, whatever. But, like, he's got to improve. I mean, like, they have not gotten nearly enough out of him. Obviously, I'm talking organizationally, Peters and Quinn didn't sign him. But, you know, they haven't gotten enough out of him since the extension. If he's able to get back to that 2022 form when he, you know, blew up with his sack total and was just a defensive presence, that can shift everything. Like, you know, the Laremy Tunsil signing, it's not just that he's able to potentially, you know, give Jaden Daniels a tremendous blindside pass protector. It shifts the entire line of in the offense as to what they can do, because they can, you know, they don't have to send a help to him, and it's going to make everything else, you know, a little bit easier for the other guys. Well, the same thing would happen here. If Daron Payne went back to that form, something, you know, I'm not saying he has to get 11 sacks again, but, you know, be much more of a disruptor than we've noticed the last couple of years, that by itself could change a lot. But it's to the fact that we don't even discuss it. You and I just had this conversation, and we're not going, well, Daron Payne, you know, why not? Well, that's the problem. He needs to – they need him to get back to something, to the form where he really is considered one of the premier disruptors in the league up the middle. But we haven't seen that, so we're almost like kind of moving on like it's not going to happen. So that may be the biggest thing they could hope for.
You know, that and the emergence of Johnny Newton as a more consistent force in year two with, as you said, a healthy offseason, which he did not have coming into his rookie year. But, you know, for those of you that I get it. You know, he had his best season in a contract year. He's 27 years old. These are his prime years. He's not past his prime. John came into the league a little bit older than Daron. Daron's 27 years old. He is capable athletically of being a very high-level interior defensive tackle. And you're right. He's got to step up, and he's got to be a more consistent player week in and week out, even though I would suggest that's not necessarily where they had their problems against the run. They had those issues more, you know, outside the tackle than they did inside the tackles, which is one of the reasons they moved him at one point to try to play the edge a little bit. But yeah, getting Daron Payne and Johnny Newton, and then hopefully what they're expecting out of Kinlaw could be huge for them defensively. I was just looking before the show started just at various things, and obviously over the last week, the additions from their own free agent pool have been significant. But they haven't, they chose not, well, I think they liked him and wanted him, but Zacchaeus moved on. I'm thinking Crowder's a possibility now for this reason. Tell me what you're thinking. And I know you don't have to have an answer to this today. I mean, that answer could come in the draft. That answer could come off last year's, you know, some of the guys that they may have signed to undrafted free agent contracts a year ago, whatever. But they don't have a punt returner on their roster. Crowder was their punt returner. Is Crowder still a possibility, do you think?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you know, he's the kind of guy, like my thought going before free agency started was he's the pull in case of emergency guy should De'Ami Brown, Zacchaeus, Noah Brown, like should that trio not return or only one of them, as the case it was Noah Brown, and he's the one that, you know, you definitely wouldn't put in that a returner type role. So yeah, I mean, I just don't think he's going to be like, you know, I don't think other teams are probably clamoring to say, hey, we got to bring in Jamison Crowder. He'll probably be there, if I had to guess, post-draft if needed. But yeah, I mean, look, he's obviously, you know, we're not talking about the flashiest of guys, but always, I never think to myself, boy, get this guy off the field, whether it's a receiver. And look, he was better at return this time than he was the first time he was here, where the fumbles seemed to be problematic. He was cleaner last year. Zacchaeus was probably the one who had more issues in that regard than Crowder. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a possibility. And, you know, that's one spot right now where, like I said before, like they've got 11 defensive linemen. If they do nothing else, they can field a rotation of guys who, you know, played last year in the league. They only have, in my view, like four receivers right now. I mean, I know K.J. Osborne's around, and he's been a productive guy in this league, but based on what we saw here last year, plus his time with New England last year, you know,
Debo, Terry, and Noah Brown.
Right. So there's at least two spots open based on, like, just keeping six. They had seven at times last year. So, yeah, I think Crowder makes a lot of sense, but my guess is that they feel like, you know, they have a sense of his market, what he is or what he isn't, and that they can go back to that at some point. So, yeah, I wouldn't be stunned at all if Crowder's back.
So when you get around to whatever next mock, I don't even know what version it'll be of the draft. Now, if Trey Hendrickson ends up remaining in Cincinnati, is it even money or slightly longer odds that Washington takes a defensive end slash edge at 29?
Yeah, I talked about this on my latest podcast episode, which should be up at some point today, so you look now at the board, like in terms of their needs, if we're going that route, yes. I mean, they need to get some sort of young upside presence at defensive end kind of regardless, right? I mean, Trey Henderson's an immediate impact, but he's 31. They don't have anybody on the perimeter that you feel like is going to be here for a few years and has some potential. So there's that. I think cornerback is the other spot where, Jonathan Jones is a one-year deal. We'll see where Lattimore is at. If he doesn't respond, he may not be here in 26. So, and they still just need pure depth there. So that's another one. And then like that general offensive playmaker, whether it's receiver, running back, speed, like those are the three spots to me that still kind of stand out. But defensive end is the most immediate impact. So the answer to your question is yes. Now, this is the part where it's obviously a bit subjective. You look at the board, you try to play this out, starting with Abdul Carter, who might be going off the board number one or number two in the draft, go down from there. I think there's like five or six edge rush types who could go, and it kind of feels like they all might go before pick 29. And then when you look at the options, sort of the next tier after that, like if you're basing it off of mock drafts and rankings, I don't know that there's like an obvious name there. I've talked before about a guy like Nick Scarriton from Texas A&M when he was at Purdue as a sophomore, he led the Big Ten in sacks last year. He bulked up with A&M and his number fell off a bit, but still considered to be a productive player. He's now slimmed down from like 280 into like the 250s, but I don't see too many mock drafts saying, hey, he's a guy going late first, you know, somewhere in the second, but not necessarily late first. So that becomes now the need versus best player available type deal. So I think that's the question for me at the moment, is just what's there. But if you said without knowing the board, yes, I would say defensive end's got to be somewhere close, like you said, like even money. I know Adam Peters would never say, hey, we're going into this, we have to get position X. And again, that's why you get 11 defensive linemen and a bunch of ends, so you don't have to feel like you have to do anything, but they need to be more explosive at that spot. So, yes, to me, that would be the odds-on favorite. And then, again, it just comes down to, like the Johnny Newton situation last year, do they think the best player at some position that they maybe need some help at is that, or, you know, is a cornerback slash offensive playmaker the best player available at that time?
I think the interesting thing, too, about this draft, as I'm starting to pay attention to it a little bit more, is edge, it's deep, and interior D lineman, it's deep. And there are going to be a bunch of both that go in the first round. And I know they took Johnny Newton last year in the second round, and that their biggest money spend on defense and free agency was Javon Kinlaw. But we've already seen Adam Peters will go best available. He did it with Newton last year. And it's possible that in terms of D linemen, an interior D lineman may be the best player on the board when they pick at 29. So, yeah, all those things are going to be interesting to watch. All right, what else? What'd you think of the tournament bracket?
It's so fun watching everybody get upset about the bracket. You know, every year it's the exact same story. It's just a different specific topic, but it's always hilarious that that's the case. I mean, you know, you're the Maryland insider here, so I'm definitely curious what you think, but it sounds like, wait, am I right? Is Grand Canyon like an online university, or what's the deal with them?
They can't be an online university. It's in Phoenix. It looks like a commuter school of some sort, right?
Well, I mean, it's not like a normal college, right? Isn't that the deal? Like,
The University of Phoenix is online, because I've seen their ads. Right? They used to do commercials all the time on TV.
Is that the one I'm thinking about? Yeah, no, you're correct on that. It's not that. It's not that. There's something confusing about Grand Canyon. All I ever knew was that, like, Dan Marley was coaching them for a while. But
well, it's Bryce Drew now.
Right. Yeah, no. But listening to the Seth Davises, whatever, you know, they were all putting Grand Canyon as a team you got to worry about, and, you know, sure, why not? So we'll see about that. But yeah, I mean,
here it is. You ready? Grand Canyon University, private for profit Christian university in Phoenix, Arizona. They offer degrees in over 200 areas of study. As of September 2023, more than 100,000 students were enrolled online and in person. So.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, there.
They had 67,000 undergrad.
Yeah. There was something different than them. It's not that, you know, they're not drawing from the same pool of college people the way. I mean, like, when I went to UMBC, it was viewed more of a commuter school, but that's different than saying,
right. Agreed.
You know, that's a different deal. But yeah, I don't know. I will say this, like, I'm not paying much attention to college basketball. My one first round upset, I'm already calling Michigan will lose. They clearly had a good finish at the end. They win the Big Ten tournament, but now they're on the shorter week playing Sunday after they're playing Thursday. They're going in to altitude in Denver. They're going to lose. I call that one now. Michigan's out in the first round.
They're playing UC San Diego, who is a very good defensive team and forces a lot of turnovers. And I can tell you, Michigan turns the ball over a lot. Yeah, sounds like a good one. All right, I'll talk to you later in the week. Appreciate it.
Awesome, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. Want to mention that WinDonation has a great deal for March Madness. It's buy two, get two free, any style of window, with no money down, no payments, and no interest for 2 years. So you can get new windows installed in a day and not pay anything for 2 years until the year 2027. All the while, you'll be saving big on utility bills, air conditioning, heating bills. Imagine what you can do with all that extra money in your pocket. WinDonation sells some of the best windows you can buy at a fraction of the price of the expensive name brands, and often outlast and outperform them too. Plus, they're guaranteed for life. So hurry, this offer ends soon. Don't miss out on your chance to take advantage of WinDonation's March buy two, get two free offer with nothing paid until the year 2027. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to WinDonation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a fast, free in-home estimate. They won't pressure you. You're not obligated to anything. It's all I ask. If you've been thinking about new windows, just give WinDonation a shot to give you a free estimate. 866-90-NATION, WinDonation.com. All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I think I've been doing the smell test for the NCAA tournament for, I think, 6 years. Several of you, when I mentioned this the other day, told me that I've definitely won more than I've lost. And I feel like that is true, but I have not documented it. I know what I did last year. I was 13-13 last year. And I'm pretty sure the year before Denton, I was on fire. And that it was significantly, I think it was something like 17-7 or something like that for the tournament. That could have been three years ago. But I think in the 6 or 7 years I've been doing smell test picks this time of year, I think it's fair to say, without having any documentation, I've won more games than I've lost. With that said, tread lightly. for entertainment purposes only. All right, what's interesting about the first round, and we had Patrick Everson on from Vegas Insider yesterday, and he said the same thing, and I totally agree with him. This is one of the events in which the public loves underdogs, especially early in the tournament. They are picking the big upsets because they always happen, and they're betting a lot of underdogs. And so, believe it or not, a lot of the favorites are anti-public sides today. But my first selection is not a favorite. It's the first game of the day. Creighton against Louisville. Louisville's laying 3. They're playing a virtual home game in Lexington against a Creighton team that's got size, that's got shooting, is well coached. I'll take Creighton plus the 3. There is overwhelming action on Louisville, and there is some sharp money on Creighton. Creighton plus 3 is the first play in the first game of the day. The second game of the day, I've got 2. Purdue is an anti-public favorite against High Point. The public, for some reason, has fallen in love with High Point. And I'll tell you, the school itself is beautiful. Maybe not the surrounding area, no offense, but the school itself is spectacular. I'm going to lay the 7.5 with Purdue as an anti-public favorite. Moving down the board, VCU is another dog that is anti-public today. People do like BYU laying. Patrick kind of disagreed, but the information I have is that a lot of shops are going to need VCU today. I'll take VCU plus the 3. And then Kansas is laying 5 against Arkansas. Arkansas is one of the most played teams of the day. Calipari, the SEC. Kansas really struggled this year. That line almost seems wrong. I don't know why Kansas is a 5-point favorite, but I'm going to guess that they know something out in Vegas. I'll take Kansas and lay the 5. A huge public play today in terms of an upset pick, an underdog, is Drake getting 6 against Missouri. I'll take Missouri in that one. And then another big underdog is Yale getting 7.5 against A&M. I'll take the other side. For those of you unfamiliar, I am an anti-public contrarian better, and that's what you've gotten from me here. 6 picks on opening day. Creighton plus 3, Purdue minus 7.5, Missouri minus 6, Kansas minus 5, VCU plus 3, and Texas A&M minus 7.5. Tomorrow I'll give out plays as well. So good luck with those. I have already played them. And I be careful with this Creighton. If you can get it at 3 right now, play it at 3 right now. Because I think there's going to be a ton of sharp money that comes in here over the next hour or so on Creighton, on the Blue Jays. They've been a good tournament team, man. McDermott's done a good job in the tournament with them. What is his tournament record? Do we know?
I think it's positive because I think he's been to at least one Elite Eight.
Last year, right? Or was it the year before?
It might have been the year before.
He's Greg McDermott in the tournament.
He's a good tournament coach, though.
He was in the Sweet 16 last year, the Elite Eight the year before that. 3 of the last 4 years, he's been in the Sweet 16 twice in the Elite Eight. Not bad.
Not bad.
All right. You ready to do brackets?
Let's do some damn brackets.
You know, this isn't my favorite thing to do, but I know people do it. It's, you know, it's so random the way this tournament works. All right, we're going to do region by region, first round games. We will give out our lower seeded teams over higher seeded teams. So let's start. Where do you want to start? In the South?
Yeah, let's start Auburn with the South, where number one ranked Auburn is.
All right. I've got Creighton a 9 over an 8, which I just told you I'm betting them. And I have New Mexico, Richard Pitino's team, a 10 over Marquette, a 7. Those are the 2 lower-seeded over higher-seeded teams I have in the South first round. What do you have?
So I got 3. I hate one of them, but I picked it anyway. I got Creighton, as you just mentioned. They are not the one that I hate. I hate that I have fallen into the UC San Diego hype over Michigan, but I got UC San Diego. It feels like everyone and their mother is on UC San Diego. I think their mascot is the Triton. I think it's kind of cool. And I told you I was going to do this as soon as we got the bracket. I got UNC over Ole Miss. I think because of the outrage that UNC is going to make it to at least the first weekend. So I got UNC.
Michigan was almost a smell test pick because everybody seems to love UCSD, but there was actually some sharp money on UCSD as well. All right, we go to the second round. We'll just talk about the teams that we have in the Sweet 16. This is where I have my biggest upset, I guess you could call it, of the tournament. I've got Creighton upsetting Auburn. You know, for me, that's the SEC team that I've not liked. I've not thought that they are overwhelmingly dominant like Florida, Duke, like Houston, the other three number ones. I see Auburn getting taken out. They play a style that is vulnerable. We've seen them lose, three of their last four games or three of their last five, whatever it is. I've got Creighton beating Auburn. I've got A&M over Michigan. I've got Ole Miss upsetting Iowa State and getting to a Sweet 16 matchup against Michigan State. So my Sweet 16 in the South is Creighton, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Michigan State.
I have Creighton, Texas A&M, North Carolina, Michigan State. So we both have Creighton.
Would not surprise me if Beard does a good job with Ole Miss in this tournament. All right, for me, it's A&M, Michigan State in the Elite Eight, a 2-4, and I've got Michigan State going to the Final Four.
I have Michigan State to the Final Four. I just have them beating Creighton, so a 2-9.
I could see that.
Big on the Blue
Creighton,
Jays.
Yeah, the Creighton-Texas A&M game was a tough call for me. All right, so we both have Michigan State in the Final Four. Let's go to the East, where Duke is the number one seed. You give your lower seededs over higher seededs first.
So I got Baylor, who's a 9, over Mississippi State, who is an 8. You bet your ass I got Liberty, who's a 12, over Oregon, who is a 5. Got to rep my squad. I got VCU, the 11, over BYU, a 6. And those are it. So those are where my upsets in the first round stop.
I was looking at your Liberty squad and trying to figure out whether or not they could pull something off against Oregon. You know, I think that's the last game of the first round.
I know. I hate it. It's
like a 10:30 start on Friday night or something like that.
I got to drink coffee at like 6 p.m. to stay up for that. I'm old.
I have Baylor over Mississippi State. I have VCU over BYU as well. BYU is an interesting team because they can really score. VCU can really defend. When BYU got absolutely shut down by a really good defensive team, Houston, in the conference tournament, after they had hung 96 on Iowa State, I think BYU is one of those teams capable of a big run, but I'm going VCU with an upset, and then I've got Vandy over Randy Bennett, who I love, and St. Mary's. All right, what do you give me your four Sweet 16 teams?
So that's fascinating that you have Vanderbilt over St. Mary's, because I have St. Mary's in the Sweet 16. I got them taking out Bama in the round of 32. So I have St. Mary's, Wisconsin, Duke, Arizona in the Sweet 16.
I've got Duke, Oregon. So I've got Oregon upsetting Arizona, and then I've got chalk with Alabama and Wisconsin. I've got a Duke, Wisconsin Elite Eight game.
I have Arizona, Wisconsin, Elite Eight game.
You've got Arizona, Wisconsin? No, you can't have Arizona, Wisconsin. Oh, yeah, you've got Arizona beating Duke.
I have Arizona, Wisconsin. Wow. I have Arizona beating Duke.
So who do you have in the Final Four?
I have Arizona in the Final Four.
I've got Duke in the Final Four. So you're doing, so far, no one seeds for you. I've got one seed with Duke. All right, let's go to the Midwest. I'll give you my lowers over uppers. I've got one. Utah State, Ian Martinez, former Terp, taking out UCLA in the first round.
Damn it, I have one. It's Utah State. That's the only one that I have.
They're good. They're well coached. They could actually make a run. I've got Utah State then shocking Tennessee and making it to the Sweet 16 against Illinois, who beats Kentucky. And then I've got Houston beating Gonzaga, Purdue beating Clemson, and Houston-Purdue in a Sweet 16 matchup.
So this is my chalkiest. I got Houston and Clemson and then Kentucky and Tennessee. So the only real upset, if you will, that I have is the 5 over the 4 in, right. In that one.
I've got Houston beating Illinois to get to the Final Four, so that's my second number one in the Final Four.
This is my first number one. I got Houston over Kentucky.
Yeah. All right. Let's move to the West region, where Florida is the one seed, and my Terps are sitting there as a four seed. Give me your lowers over hires.
So only two first in this round. One. I have Colorado State over Memphis, and then I have Arkansas over Kansas. I don't love the Arkansas thing, but I went with Calipari.
I have all higher seeded teams in the first round. I don't have one lower seeded team beating a higher seeded team. I thought about UNC Wilmington, but I backed off that. So that brings us to the second round games. Give me the teams that make it to the Sweet 16.
I have Florida and Maryland, so you'll be happy about that. And then I have St. John's and Texas Tech. So maybe this is the chalkiest because it's literally just 1-4.
I have Florida against Maryland, and then I've got Missouri. Dennis Gates and the job he's done at Missouri facing Rick Pitino and St. John's. Elite Eight for you.
Florida and St. John's.
Maryland can beat anybody in this tournament, Denton. Let me just make sure that you understand this. We've done this together, what? This is year three doing this together?
Yeah, it feels like a lifetime, but year three.
I don't just pick Maryland blindly to go deep into the tournament. You know, I've probably done that before, but they've been worthy of it because of their seeding and how good they were. They're a 4 seed. They're not a 10 seed. They're not a 7 seed. They're a 4 seed. They've proven that on their best night, they are very difficult to guard. So is Florida. That could be one of the games of the second weekend. Florida and Maryland, I've got Maryland advancing to the Elite Eight, where Kevin Willard will coach against his mentor, Rick Pitino, and St. John's in the Elite Eight final in San Francisco out west. Who do you have in the Final Four?
I have Florida in the Final Four. Do it. I know you want to do it.
Oh, I'm doing it. I've got Maryland in the Final Four. I've got Maryland as a 4, playing Michigan State as a 2, and then 2 1s on the other side, Duke and Houston. You have Houston and Arizona, a 1 versus a 4, and then you've got a 1 versus a 2 in Florida against Michigan State.
Correct.
So your final and your champion.
My final is Houston and Florida, with Houston coming out on top, and Kelvin Sampson finally getting himself a championship for the Cougars.
You know, if Maryland doesn't, you know, go that far and have a chance, honestly, I would love it if Kelvin Sampson won a national championship, and I would be rooting for him. And last year, after the injury that they had and the loss that they had, I would love to see him win a national championship. Anybody that knows coaching, talks to coaches, everybody understands how good Kelvin Sampson has been over the course of his career. He got this Houston team to the Final Four in 21, and then last year, you know, just painful, where they lost, you know, their best player, and they were knocked out in the Sweet 16 by Duke. I think they're going to get a chance to beat Duke in that semifinal, but I have Duke advancing to face Maryland in the national championship game. Maryland gets revenge on Michigan State in a semifinal. And that would be the closest thing they have to a rival in the Big Ten, and it's not really a rivalry. And then they would face their longtime rival that a lot of Duke fans would say, not our rival, in the championship game. And I have the Terps cutting down the nets April 7th in San Antonio.
Somewhere Coach K is pissed. He's shaking his fist at his radio.
Who do you have winning it? You've got Houston winning the whole thing.
I got Houston over Florida, yeah.
Yeah. I've got Maryland over Duke. Of course there is some wishful thinking here. But again, like I don't think that I've predicted Maryland to win the national championship in a long, long time. I don't think in 2020 I would have predicted them to win the national championship. I may have predicted a Final Four run with that particular team. Look, to me, I think Duke's the best team in this draw. I really do. So that's the biggest stretch for me, is Maryland beating Duke, you know, assuming a healthy Cooper Flag. But I certainly think Maryland can beat Grand Canyon. I certainly think Maryland will be, they're 10.5-point favorite over Grand Canyon. They'll be a 6 or 7-point favorite over Memphis or Colorado State, minimum. Against Florida right now in a Sweet 16 game, what's the point spread?
Probably Florida 6.5.
Might be less than that by the time we get to it. Certainly not an overwhelming number, you know, and nobody's going to think that it's impossible. And then, to be honest with you, if they knock Florida off, they actually could be favored in the Elite Eight. So, enjoy the basketball, everybody. Back tomorrow.